Julia Cameron has been changing lives all over the world since The Artist's Way first came out in 1992. Millions of people write morning pages and take artist dates, two of Julia's most well-known tools for finding your creativity and living out your truth. Since then, Julia has gone on to author more than 40 books, plays, and works of poetry. She is commonly referred to as the godmother or high priestess of creativity. The Artist's Way has been translated into 40 languages and sold over 5 million copies to date. In today's conversation, Julia and I explore the ideas and tools from her latest book, The Listening Path, The Creative Art of Attention. Hi, I'm Daphne Cohn, your host, and you're listening to Beyond, in-depth explorations into the ideas, the philosophy, and the paths taken by brave and experimental artists and makers who have found the courage to forge a new way forward and use their creativity to make their thing and change their world. Some things Julie and I talk about are learning to listen after getting sober, the difference between listening with one's intellect and with one's heart, how to be obedient to what you hear, authentic listening, and the power of listening to remember who you are. Before we dive into the conversation, I want to share with you about a love note in some ways that I put out to my community almost every week. It is really all that I have come across or all that I'm creating or all that I have to offer for those who are wild enough to make their own art and live their own life. It's resources, art workshops, artist talks, podcast conversations, books, articles, whatever I have that I can offer to you. And you can get it by signing up over at daphnecohn.com. Now, on to the show. May it inspire you to make your thing and change your world. Hello, Julia, and welcome to Beyond the Podcast. It is a real honor to have you.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
I wanted to start with, because this interview is really, even though you have so many books and there's so much about you, this interview is really about your new book, The Listening Path, The Creative Art of Attention. And one thing I noticed in listening to some interviews that you've done, and in particular a talk that you gave, was it sounded to me like your journey with all of this, pre The Artist's Way, really your journey from becoming sober to the path that you have been on since, started with listening. Would you say that that's true?
I'd say that's very accurate. Before I got sober, I was trying to be a little smarty. I wanted to be thought brilliant. I wanted to be thought creative. I wanted to be thought wonderful. And after I got sober, I started trying to write from a spirit of service. And that involved listening to what I felt the higher forces wanted to write through me. So I would say that, yes, starting with January 1978, I was quite a listener.
Did you find that to be a tough transition to go from wanting to be this smart, well-written person to I'm going to listen and let whatever wants to come through, come through?
Well, I was willing to try it. I was desperate to be able to write sober. And I previously had thought that my writing was maybe a product of tequila or J&B scotch. So when I tried to write sober, I became willing to listen because I felt cornered into listening. I felt like it was the only path. I was told, try and let the higher power write through you. And I jokingly, smartass, said, well, what if it doesn't want to? And they said, well, just try it. And I found that my writing flowed more easily.
What do you think it is that, even though your path started with this listening, Why now are you writing a book really about listening?
Well, I think it has to do in part with where I live. I live above Santa Fe on a mountain, and during the day, it's very quiet. And I began to hear the sounds of my environment, and I began to think, oh, I need to pay closer attention to this.
And I really want to get into a lot of different things you write about in the book. And I just think it's such an interesting time because it's getting harder and harder, it feels like, to listen. And do you find, as you are starting to teach this message of listening, are people hungry to start listening more deeply? Are they finding it hard to listen deeply?
So your question is, how is it impacting people?
And how is it impacting, but also how are they responding to this idea, given that we live in a world where it can be very challenging to listen deeply?
Well, I think that people have been starved for deeper listening. And that particularly during the COVID, when we have our television sets turned on to the news, and they move us to despair and resentment and anger. I think when I say to them, turn off the noise and just quietly listen, people are greatly relieved. I think a lot of people listen to the news out of a sense of obligation. And I removed them from their obligation to listen to the news and said, listen to your environment, listen to your friends, listen to your higher self. And from there, they moved on into listening beyond the veil. And I felt that what they had been waiting for was just for somebody to give them permission. And your show is called Beyond. And I think people needed permission to reach beyond.
Yeah, it's so fascinating how a lot of these things that we crave, we wait for someone else to give us permission, and we may not even be aware of that. But I think, so one thing I want to talk about with listening, because listening is a big word, and then you have a couple different ways that you talk about listening. And one of them is the difference between listening with one's heart and one's intellect. Can you talk about the difference between those two?
Well, as I said, before I got sober, I listened to my intellect, which wanted me to be a little smarty. And it was sort of skeptical and sort of, I would say, show-offy. And I think when people listen to their intellect, they're trying to be clever and trying to sort of outsmart reality. And I think when people listen with their heart, they're trying to be wise. The heart is tender, wise, gentle, far-seeing, and the intellect may go for a quick fix, and the heart will say, no, hold on, what's really the best path?
So that's more of the listening to oneself, right? As opposed to listening to others. If we're listening to ourselves, or we're listening to our beyond the veil, or we're listening to our higher self, that's what you're talking about, is listening with our heart to ourself and what is outside of ourself. Correct.
But we also listen with our heart to others. For example, talking to you, I'm trying to listen to my heart and to the intent of your podcast to help people and serve people. And I think that that's important, that when we listen to another, we listen open-heartedly.
Well, I like that you brought that up because when you brought up that you're thinking of this podcast and my audience, and I think, well, yeah, most of my audience, the vast majority of them are women, and the vast majority of them are artists, makers, creatives of some kind. And I think one of the challenges that we face is trusting what it is that wants to come out of us, like what it is that wants to be made. How does listening, how do you bring listening into the creative process in that way?
Well, as you know, I've written 40 books, and people will say to me, Julia, how can you be so productive? And I always say, I listen. And people may think I'm being glib, but in fact, I do listen, and I'm obedient to what I hear. I think we should backtrack a little bit. And talk about the three basic tools at the beginning of the book, because those tools are tools of listening. And the first tool trains you to listen to yourself. And that's a tool called Morning Pages. And it's 3 pages of longhand morning writing about absolutely anything. And what happens when you listen to yourself is that you begin to be more authentic, and you find that you connect more deeply, to your environment, to others, and to yourself. The second tool is a tool of release. If you believe you're building a spiritual radio kit and that with Morning Pages you're sending, you're saying to the universe, this is what I like, this is what I don't like. When you take an artist's date, which is a once a week solo, frivolous, festive, fun expedition to do something that enchants or interests you, then you have flicked the dial over from send to receive. And many people report that when they started doing artist dates, they had a sense of a higher power. They had a sense of a benevolent something that was touching their lives. The third tool is very simple, and it's walking. And when we walk, we open ourselves up to hunches, intuitions, insights. And the three tools used together make a very potent doorway to walk through toward listening. So we start with those tools and then we move forward.
So just two things in response to what you said. One, with the morning pages that I think is so valuable, which is anything. You can write anything. Like that to me feels such a deep value of the listening where anything is accepted. And then the other piece about walking, I just wanted you to clarify because a lot of time, so many of us walk, but we're walking, listening on our phones now to podcasts or having conversations on the phone. But that's not what you're talking about. You're talking about really being with oneself, right?
Yes, and it doesn't take long. I tell people try and go twice a week for 20 minutes at a time and go without your devices. So, what we're talking about are tools that are solo. You write morning pages about anything from the petty to the profound, and you don't show them to anybody. They're personal, they're private. They're a place to vent, a place to dream, a place to state clearly how you feel about things. And when you do morning pages, you find yourself becoming more honest. Because you're honest on the page, it makes it easier to be honest in person.
And so then taking this back to where I was with the question around creativity, I imagine then now you're making something different because you're being more honest with yourself. So what's being made is then more honest, would you say? Or has that been your experience?
Like I said, I make things by listening.
Right.
And I had a interesting thing happen. Are you familiar with the singer Judy Collins?
Yes.
She's a girlfriend of mine. And during COVID, I called her up and said, "What are you doing? How are you spending your time?" And she said, "Well, I'm writing a coffee table book. I'm writing a memoir. I'm playing the piano. I'm singing. I'm writing songs." And I thought, oh, dear God, here I am, supposedly the queen of creativity. And I'm comparing myself to Judy and coming up quite short. And then I went back to the morning pages and said, oh, dear, I feel like I need to write about something. And my pages said to me, write about birds. So I obediently said to the page, oh, aren't they lovely? And that became the first line of a play. And every day I would say, I don't know what to write today. And the guidance would come back to me, just listen, you don't need to know beyond today. So the play unfolded a scene at a time without a superstructure ahead of time. And I think that that was a credit to my years of listening. I found I could listen for dialogue.
That just brings me back to what you said earlier when you said you listen and then you're obedient to what you hear. And you talk about that in the listening path too. And I think that's a really important piece because you talk about it in a couple different ways. One is you hear something and then you do it. And the other is trusting that what you hear is yours. And I know that that comes up a lot because you've mentioned it at different points in the book where people say, but can I trust that it's really for me? Can I try? So when you're obedient to what you hear, are you just, you trust everything that comes out at this point?
I write a lot of poetry. And poetry to me is like taking truth serum. The rhymes seem to dictate that you tell the truth. I wanted to read you a poem that was cued for me. So could I read you this poem?
Please, I would love that, yeah.
And I thought you would identify with it. Tell me if I'm wrong. It's called Jerusalem is Walking in This World. This is a great happiness. The air is silk. There is milk in the looks that come from strangers. I could not be happier if I were bread and you could eat me. Joy is dangerous. It fills me with secrets. Yes, kisses in my veins. The pains I take to hide myself are sheer as glass. Surely this will pass. The wind like kisses, the music in the soup, the group of trees laughing as I say their names. It is all Hosanna. It is all prayer. Jerusalem is walking in this world. Jerusalem is walking in this world.
That's beautiful. I really appreciate you reading that.
Thank you.
So one of the things you've mentioned this a couple times, this like listening authentically, like we become more honest and that there's this idea of listening authentically, and you talk about listening authentically in the book. And I would like to hear you say a little more about what it looks like What is that difference, like the authentic listening? Because I think it also leads to that question around trusting what we hear.
When we talk about authentic listening, we can talk about the three tools that we use to listen. We can talk about listening to our environment, where we tune into the sounds around us rather than tuning out. And we're listening to see, is this pleasant or unpleasant? And authentic listening tells us the difference between the two. And we often then change. For example, if we have been taking a route to work where it's always crowded and there's lots of honking, instead of just becoming outraged at the honking, we say, is there an alternative route? Is there a quieter way to go? So authentic listening to others is waiting for them to finish their thoughts instead of cutting them off. Listening with your heart to their heart. And a lot of times when we listen authentically, we get people sort of excited. They think, oh, you really want to know what I think? Well, I'll tell you. And then they make a revelation, and the revelation is authentic.
So what I hear you saying is that space, really giving a lot of space to the listening and seeing what comes out of the listening instead of listening with the intention to respond.
Yes, I think a lot of times people don't have genuine conversations. They listen and they hear a little bit of a thought and then they jump in and they cut the speaker off and they try and finish the thought, and it may not be the direction the conversation was intended to go. So I think when we listen authentically, we're pausing. It's sort of a waltz. 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3. You and me, you and me, you and me.
You know, that makes me think of that pausing and the really patient back and forth, like you say, 1, 2, 3, you and me, that just that back and forth. One of the things that you had written, which really jumped out at me, is you said, as we withdraw our energies back into our own core, we are shocked by the power that is suddenly ours to do with as we please. Many of us have spent our lives being batteries for others. And it stood out for me in part because it comes back to this idea when you talked about giving people permission to listen, and how it's not that how we don't even realize we're waiting for that permission. And I think it's that same idea with the core, that we keep not coming back to our own core, and we don't realize that we're waiting for permission to do that. And that when we do, so much changes. So the question I have around that is that sense of permission, because I wonder if part of the reason we struggle with that giving back to ourselves is because we just haven't given ourselves the permission, and we don't think we either deserve it or we've earned it or we're worth it. Do you have thoughts on that when people struggle with that?
Yes, I have another poem that I think addresses what you're talking about, Daphne.
Okay.
So bear with me while I read you another poem. It's called Remembering. I was not there when your mother bore you. Surely you came into this world hungering and wet. We all do that. Surely you came like the rest of us from that dark sea of souls, that sighing that brings us forth and calls us back. We all share that. If this is true, and it is, even for you, why are you a broken glass smashed against the floor? Why not the sea's grass on the ocean floor? Why not a smooth stone, a willow in the wind? Why do you break, not bend? And even broken, why not mend? You do know how. Walk with me to the edge of the city. Take off your shoes and feel the earth. It is softer than a woman. It is safer than your father. It is water. It is air. It is where you are returning with this yearning you can't name. Cast off your shame. It's an old coat. Remember who you are. You are a star, a mountain, that fountain in the sun. Your heart is the velvet cave where birds sing. Are you remembering?
Yes. What I hear in that poem is we give ourselves the permission when we remember all that we are this beautiful divine being on this planet.
Yes, I think we need permission to remember our own beauty. And I think what the listening path does is gently coax people along a path to remembering who they are. You know, we live in sort of a primitive society. We don't believe we can trust our ancestors. We believe that when people pass on, that's it, it's over. And I think when we talk to those who have passed beyond, we contact a source of wisdom and of power. And the messages that we get when we reach beyond the veil are often very encouraging. And they urge you to trust yourself. They say there is no error in your path. And you think, oh, if I trusted myself, what would I do? And it moves us into expansion.
Love that. Trusting ourselves moves us into expansion. So that makes me think of something that when you were talking about in the section of listening beyond the veil, and you talk about setting our skepticism aside because it's easy to think, I don't know, am I really hearing any voice outside of my own? And how do I trust this? And you mentioned this a little earlier too, Julia, but you said we're asked to be vulnerable, childlike, and open. And this comes back to also listening with the heart and the way you described listening with the heart. Those attributes seem like ones that we don't tend to cherish, and like we hold up, like you said in the beginning, you know, you wanted to be smart and you wanted to present a certain way. So if we're used to that, if we're used to wanting to be smart and be put together and know, what are some ways that you help people really come back to that and trust in that more vulnerable, childlike, open place, a place that we may not have gone to for a very long time?
Well, this comes back to why we do those three basic tools, because we're trying to encourage a part of ourselves that is vulnerable, open, and childlike. And we may be sort of sick of hearing about the inner child, but the truth is that the part of you that creates is vulnerable, is youthful. And I think that we are reaching inside ourselves to find what is our truth. And I think we find that we are much more open-minded than we knew. If you were a Lakota elder, you would offer offerings to your ancestors every morning. And if you were in Japan, you would have an altar to your ancestors. So we are a sort of primitive culture that tends to be focused on the visible world. And I thought it was encouraging to me that your podcast was called Beyond. And I thought, beyond the despond, you know, that it gives people hope.
Yes.
And I think hope is what we're all missing. And I think this is where turning off the radio, turning off the television, turning off the social media brings us back.
Yes, and I think what you say here about hope is so fascinating, because when you say when we listen, we find that we're much more open-minded than we knew. And hope is so deeply rooted in that open-mindedness. It's the possibility that happens when we open up our minds. And that, I love this idea that as we listen more deeply to ourselves, we discover that about ourselves. Did you find that in the writing of this book that you became even more open, childlike, vulnerable, like, or is it just that it's been so long that you've been developing that? Just curious, like in paying such deep attention to listening, what happened?
Well, I think I've been listening and writing out guidance for many, many years. And I think that writing this book, I began to listen more acutely. And I'm going to read you another poem. I feel like the poetry gives voice to some of the deeper things we feel. And this is a poem that's responding to your saying, we come back to our core. It's called Come to Me. Come to me. There is no darkness in which I cannot see you. Come to me. My green heart holds your ancestors. They are waiting to hear your dreams. Speak to them. They know your name. Do not imagine you are alone. Do not imagine they have left you. They are listening, waiting for your voice. Come home. All of us are waiting. Every bird remembers you. The lion in his pride still knows your name. The gazelle, the snake, the silver heron lifting at the shore. All these and more, your family. Come back to me. You do not need to grind your bones to dust, rusting your heart. You are known to us. Only come home.
Yes, it's that coming home. And that's the, like you say, the recharging of our batteries, the coming back to our core. And this may be an obvious question, but I want to ask it because I want to hear your response to it, which is, it sounds to me that this deep listening is one of the most powerful things we can do to relieve our suffering and that sense of being alone.
Yes, absolutely. I think that when we listen deeply and when we write, we're bearing witness to ourselves. And we're saying, you matter, your thoughts all matter, from the petty to the profound. I'm listening to you, I'm paying attention. And I think that when we pay attention, we begin to find the words of the poem, your heart is the velvet cave where birds sing. Am I answering your question?
Yes, beautifully, beautifully. Okay, so as we come towards the latter part of the interview, one piece I want to touch on is silence, because we've talked about listening to ourselves and how we listen with our heart and listening beyond the veil and to our higher self. And then you have this whole piece on silence, which is a whole nother kind of listening. Well, I'm just going to read this one piece because I think this is really beautiful. You say, gentle sounds make for gentle lives. As our kindly sounds smooth our psyches, we become more kindly. Rather than acting abruptly, as harsh staccato sounds seem to demand, we respond rather than react, and we respond tenderly. As we take in the sonic environment that speaks to our heart, we are able to forge more heartfelt lives. As we soften the throne of our lives, we soften our responses to the world around us. No longer harsh and staccato, our lives become gentler. And I think this is one of the things I'm hearing, and then I think it goes even deeper with the silence, so I'll say the question in a minute. The thing I'm hearing is the more we listen, the kinder we become, the softer we become, the more open we become, the more honest we become, the less alone we feel. And so what part does silence, listening to silence, have in all of that?
When you listen to silence, you really hear something. And you can call it whatever you want. I had a publisher read the manuscript of The Listening Path and say to me, I am an atheist and a Jew, and I feel like I am not your target audience, but I found the book spoke to me. I had another person say to me, Julia, I'm an atheist. And I said, oh, really? I'm a believer. And he said, I've been doing morning pages for 22 years, and I have written 13 feature films. And I said to him, well, you may not believe in God, but clearly God believes in you. So would you allow me to read you one more poem?
Absolutely.
I just feel like the poetry addresses the issues that we're talking about. And this is, I'm circling back to the very beginning of the interview when you asked me, why write about silence now? This is the answer. It's called This Earth. This earth is not made for our misery. It does not grow on trees like the fruits. You do not gather it like berries. It is not a vegetable, a root, the tall, delicious grasses. It does not swim in our sea or roam the prairies. The earth knows sorrow, floods, famines, droughts that scorch the earth to parchment so our names blow away like dust. The earth knows loss, sudden frost, a pestilence, insects descending like dark buzzing clouds to eat even our thoughts. The treacherous snow, the rains that fall too early or too late. We can live with these. The earth is practicing these griefs. They are natural, like the child who slips away despite our love. The earth can hold and soften all these sorrows. Just give her time. Time that turns her fields from green to brown. Time that curls the vine to sweet tendrils, like tiny hands. Our misery makes something else from time. The ticking is not natural. Our bodies know the cost. Feel how they long to lay down amid the grasses. Hear them sigh for a wind that carries cricket song and lark, a wind that sloughs and ripples like a river. Our earth isn't made from sound like that. Take off your shoes. Lay your cheek to this dark earth who longs to comfort you. This earth is not made for our misery. We are made miserable longing for this earth.
Yes, and I think one thing that I hear in that too is the trusting, the listening to the body as well. Like, we haven't really talked about that, but there's that element of what does the body want right now? What is the body telling us? Because we so often tend to listen with our mind.
Right. I was just going to say, when we listen to the body, we're listening to the heart.
Ah, Okay. And it's that deep listening is so much of that happens in the silence, because that's what I hear you saying. Like, how do we know that our body wants to lie down on the earth at this time unless we're paying attention to the silence?
So I think that one thing that people will say is that when they listen to the silence, they hear the still small voice. And I think that the still small voice becomes amplified by silence. Our intuitions, our senses, if we go into silence, when we come back to the world, we are more acute. We are more grounded.
Yes, I find that to be true. Absolutely. Okay, as I go into the last part, which is there's just a few things, and then I'll ask you one last question. But we haven't even touched on, and I just think that's important to mention, although we don't have to go into it because there's so many interviews with you and there's so many stories out there. But so much of your life has been like, so many of the miracles, quote unquote miracles that happen, have come from this listening of just you hear something and then you follow it and the next thing unfolds. And I just wanted to point out, because your life is such a testament to your listening and the power of it. So that brings me to the last piece of, first of all, to let people know where to find you. I think most people probably do, but if they don't, they can go to your website, juliacameronlive.com, and there is everything. You can find out everything and get all the information on the listening path and the artist's way and the 40 other books that you have written and plays and poems and all of it and the classes, everything. Everything is on that website. And before I ask the last question, one thing that I do at the end of every interview is share gratitude. And I can feel in my body as I'm talking with you, I feel the level of listening. It's like, as I've been talking to you, I have felt my body just get quieter and quieter and more settled. And I know that is because of the quality of your listening. So thank you for being such a both powerful example of what can happen in a life when someone listens as deeply as you do, but also someone who listens just to be in the presence of someone who listens as deeply as you do. Thank you for that.
Well, it's been wonderful to listen to you, and it was a wonderful experience.
Well, thank you. And then what you share about listening, I love listening and still, and I, of course I read your book, but what you share about it just in this conversation, it just is like you really get the power of listening. So on that note, as we end, I know we've jumped around some and hit on a few things, and your book goes into a lot more. There's a lot of stories, you interview a lot of people, there are a lot of different perspectives that are offered. So there's a lot of different ways into listening through the listening path. Is there something though that you would like to say specifically to those listening about anything else about the power of it to change a life?
I think that listening makes us sure-footed. And I think that as we listen and hopefully following the listening path, we write out our guidance and we hear there is no error in your path. You can trust our bond. Do not doubt our benevolence. And I think that if I have done anything with the listening path, it's tried to put people in touch with that benevolence and to listen with their hearts.
That's beautiful. I know I didn't ask you this, but do you have any last poem you'd like to close out with?
Aha. I have a rebellious poem.
Okay, great.
And hopefully this is a way that people will feel after they have worked with the tools of the listening path, which makes us larger. It's called You Cannot Name Me. You cannot name me. You do not know my name. I am not that small and foolish thing you would have me be. You cannot name me. I am an arrow shot through time. My rhyme is not so narrow as your reason. Do not doubt, I will have my season. You'd make me small. You'd make me call you sir, as if I were some cur mewling through the streets whipped in yellow. I am not that fellow you would meet. There is a blindness in your eyes. You cannot see my size. I am larger than your fears, deeper than the tears God wept for ocean. We are meant to do devotion out of love. The hawk, the dove, the black bear and her cub, the oak, the ash, the willow and the grass, each has its song, and you have got mine wrong to name me small. And if I wear your cell, I'll burst it like a shell. I'll be both large and small. I'll name me after all. The letters you don't use, those are what I choose.
That's fantastic. Thank you so much, Julia.
So thank you. It was a pleasure. I could hear how much you loved poetry, and it was a pleasure to share it with you.
Yes, I am a huge fan of poetry. I read it every day. So I really, really appreciated you sharing so many of them of your own. I appreciate you taking the time to write this book, and I appreciate you taking the time to listen so deeply to your life.
Thank you very much, Daphne.
I'm Daphne Cohn, and you've been listening to the Beyond Podcast. For more conversations with brave and experimental artists and makers, and to learn more about Within, which is my private community for artists and makers, head on over to daphnecohn.com. You can follow the podcast and everything else beyond on Instagram at Daphne Cohn. You can support the podcast and the artists on it by going to iTunes Podcasts and subscribing, rating, and reviewing this podcast. And I want to thank you so much for listening. I want to thank you so much for being a part of this journey. And mostly, I want to thank you for making. Dun, dun. Ooh, dun, dun. The sunshine.